documentary on News Talk.
Now on Documentary and Drama on News Talk, producer Hugh Hick tells the intimate story of one man in County Mayo whose life changed completely during COVID lockdown, when he brought cello and the stunning landscapes of the west of Ireland to the world. This is Strings.
These mountain sheep are wonderfully horned. They have these curled horns that are so distinctive.
It's July, in the middle of County Mayo. I say middle. I'm not exactly sure where it'd be on a map because I don't have one and my phone's GPS has stopped working. All I know is the view's pretty good.
What's different about these from most, for instance, Texel sheep?
That's Patrick. Or Paddy, as I know him as. He lives up this neck of the woods. I'm just a visitor. Here to see him, actually. My name is Hugh Hick. Me and Paddy have been friends since we were 16. Back then, we spent days hiking up mountains and playing music together. We're still friends today, except now, I spend my days making radio programs, and he lives here, in County Mayo. And it was here in Mayo that a few years ago, his life changed completely.
The little knowledge I pick up about working a camera has been so helpful in sharing my music. I always loved playing around with cameras and always thought it would be wonderful to have an excuse to learn more of them. And it turned out that, like a lot of things for me, that little interest that I had that seemed like just a hobby ended up being really helpful and really important to how I ended up putting this work together.
If you Google Patrick Dexter, the first picture you'll probably see is a man in his 30s sitting in front of a cottage with a cello. Behind him, the sort of breathtaking scenery you usually see on postcards. You'll probably see dozens of variations of this picture, actually. In some of them will be a big black dog, that's Nisha. There'll be black clouds, frosty grass, blue skies, ominous grey and wet, muddy exteriors. It's a simple variation on a scene which has become familiar to hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people, through Instagram, Twitter and various other features Paddy has done on ITE, BBC, Sky News, CNN and a host of others. Because you see, about 10 years ago, Patrick moved from Dublin to Mayo to get away from city life for a quiet monkish existence in the countryside. And a few years after that, something happened to him during the COVID pandemic that changed all that. He started making videos of himself playing the cello, an instrument he's had close to him since childhood. What started as something fun he'd send to his friends and his family soon went viral and all around the world. And that's why I'm here. Because I think what happened to Paddy is an interesting story. And I'd like to know more about what it was about my friend from Ballantyre moved to Mayo and his cello that set the world's imagination on fire.
I couldn't really experience or I didn't have any sense of how far this music was travelling. The kind of numbers when you see it on social media and online of how many people are tuned into what you're doing seems kind of abstract, but it's only when you're in a room performing with people and you see how much this music has meant to them. That dawned on me what had happened, how far my music had travelled.
Welcome.
So this is it.
This is the college. It's the old same layout that all these colleges you'll see dotted along the hillside are like, three rooms. And then we have bedroom through there, and then this is what we call the studio, but it's really just a room with windows out looking one look.
It's my first time in Paddy's cottage. Like everyone else, the closest I've been before now has been seeing the exterior in his videos. I've been meaning to visit, but between COVID and life resuming after COVID, maybe I'm just a bad friend.
Microphone setup. It's a very simple setup, but I love the sound of this high roof in the old cottage and the warmth and depth it gives the cello. So I do all my recordings in this room.
You can hear the acoustics.
There's a good echo of that roof. It makes our voices sound a bit cavernous, but with the cello, it really adds something to it. It gives a richness that my ears have grown very used to that sound. And I remember when I first was going to record, the thought of getting rid of that by being in a insulated studio was, I sort of broke my heart, the thought of that sound that I've grown to love and know so well would be completely gone. So that's, where the idea came to do all the recordings in this room. But got to have an open space for playing cello or harp, as it was recently. It takes up a good bit of space. I like to keep it fairly clear, but I guess having a room like this to record in was my lifelong dream. And when I was younger, living in shared houses or growing up in a big family with seven kids, you never had a little quiet place where you could record. This is a special little quiet place that has really become sonically part of what I do every day.
I'd like to think that we didn't push anybody into music, and that wasn't our intention. That it's just our first one, Roisin, started singing. I remember her imitating the cuckoo when she was just a couple of years old, and we thought, gosh, maybe there is something in the genes, which comes down from my wife and myself. But no, it just happened naturally. When you have a lot of children, you're looking for things to occupy them, and music is a natural.
This is John Dexter, Paddy's dad, or to be more exact, the dad to seven kids, all of them musicians. John himself has had a distinguished career as a music teacher, conductor, composer, and church organist.
Do you remember when and how Patrick got introduced to the cello?
Oh, you're testing my memory now. I'd say in reaction to two big sisters doing the violin, I'm wanting to do something different.
Oh, absolutely. That's Paddy. He lived in the shadow of his two older sisters. Bless him.
Aisling McCormick, one of those two older sisters.
And I always remember climbing. He was a climber. He climbed trees and we'd muck around. I mean, Paddy and I were very, very close as kids. And I'd say in that kind of, once he became old enough to kind of play with, we would just play together hours and hours and make up silly jokes and games. And then, Neil came along, Sean, and as kids then we were kind of left to our own devices a bit. So the cello was definitely because Paddy wanted to be his own person. He wanted his own instrument.
I don't know if I was given a choice in the matter. It was kind of I was probably about 7 or 8 years old when I would have started. I do remember feeling a sense of pride and identity that it was not a violin, that I was going to be different from my sisters. It was somehow more impressive to have this big instrument.
My experience growing up, music was everything. Music was life. It just, we famously, we sing grace before we eat together at dinner. I don't know if you've ever experienced that.
The cello was with me from an early age, and I always had it as part of my life, although I drifted in and out with it in terms of it being my main instrument. I had lots of other interests in music and in life, and never was able to stick to the dedicated routine of a classical cellist, which is stick to your one instrument, practice all day, every day. That wasn't quite my relationship with the cello. It was more something that I picked up socially, as something that I played with friends in different bands and music projects growing up.
One of those friends was Jeffrey Courtney.
I met Paddy Dexter when I was 7 years old. I received a scholarship to St. Patrick's Cathedral in town in Dublin to sing in the choir. And actually at that time, Paddy's dad, John, was the choral master there. It would have been, John at the piano, and we would have, sort of this room, the Hewson room in the choir school next to the cathedral. where there's a piano at the top in the middle and just these pews, these kind of standing pews either side of the piano. And the oldest guys would be, you know, closest to the piano, singing the solos, kind of carrying the choir. And for better or for worse, the youngest of us would be towards the back. You'd go over to the Dexter's house, and it was a really, it was an open door. Everybody was welcome, really friendly. There was piano, you know, French horn, trombone, violins. There was just musical instruments everywhere. You could just, you know, pick up anything, play, jam. Obviously, at that age, we were starting to get into more, you know, pop, rock music, but with those classical influences. So just, you know, just a cool household, right?
Bay, it's a bit that juts in from the west of Ireland. I mean, Mayo juts out quite far.
It's my second day in Mayo with Paddy. He's giving me a whistle-stop tour of the locality around Westport. At times you feel like you're in the middle of nowhere. And depending on your definition of nowhere, you might be right. But it's the sort of place that every nowhere has a story. And Paddy knows most of them. He's telling me one about John Lennon. One that I've rarely heard, about how in the 70s, John and Yoko had bought an island off the coast of Mayo, Dornish Island.
Then people set up a kind of hippie commune there, and then they didn't really visit, and then they got disinterested or disillusioned with it. But the hippie commune kept going, and didn't turn out very well, as often these things do.
Yeah.
Infighting and bad management of, like, this tiny island.
Even back then, there was something about this part of the country that drew the alternatives, the creatives, and the displaced. Although Paddy only moved here in his 20s, his relationship with Mayo has stretched back his whole life.
We never, when I was younger, went anywhere else for our holidays. It was my granddad had a cottage in Mayo, and we went there every summer. And it was always like a real highlight of the year, and we'd... My dad was a teacher, so he'd get long summer breaks.
Yeah, it came to my wife's family in the 1970s, and gradually they spent more and more time here. And it's a very traditional cottage, like so many here, with a central room, two chimneys, and one room on each side. And they've, over the years, we've just made it a little more comfortable. We just gradually, her parents and then us, and now our children just getting to know the whole area more. And the neighbours are just, as somebody, one of them said just the other day, John, you're one of us. And that was the biggest compliment they ever made. Because we do feel that. We love it here.
I remember in the mid-90s, this is as far back as I can remember, when I would have been, you know, 4 or 5 years old, there was a big heat wave, and it was my first memory of just the whole time we were in Mayo, just spending all day, every day outside, running around the garden, going up the lane with my dad to see, chat to the farmers and meet the cattle and the sheep and the local dogs. And me still needing help walking or maybe holding my dad's hand, so I must have been very young. But I remember that summer.
The experience of walking out of our front gate here and just, you've got nature, you've got hares running along the road, you've got all the cows and the sheep and the noises and the birds and total freedom and beauty. I think the freedom is almost as important as the beauty. And certainly my memory of him as a child was to be just to walk out and just be free and observe and absorb everything that's around him.
There was always a guitar lying around and everybody was singing and passing the guitar around. And, you know, that's just one of the things that I've loved about my social circle that includes Paddy, whether it's you know, in the later years, weddings, or in those years, just a six pack of cheap beer down the countryside. singing songs, hanging out, just a creative environment, and, you know, creativity, music flowing. It was a really special place to be.
I remember at the time, so we were in our 20s, a lot of friends, and were making plans. If they were making plans to move, they were making plans to move to bigger cities. You know, if they lived in Galway, they were going to move to Dublin. If they lived in Dublin, they were going to move to London. They were going to move to Vancouver, wherever it was, Australia. People had, it was sort of expected that if you were ambitious in life, that was the direction that you were going.
Because he'd lived in Vietnam and he's in the Netherlands. And, you know, I did know he wouldn't settle in Dublin.
It was something that had been burning in the back of my mind, and in particular of my partner, Jan. She was, she'd graduated from art school and was developing her own, developing her art. And alongside that came a desire, I feel, to move away from the city and to try what it was like to live a different kind of life than a city life. Not thinking much of it, just wanting to try something different, and it being a nice accompaniment to the quietness that maybe an artist would be looking for when they are trying to develop their ideas. So I kind of saw this from afar, because I never really saw myself as an artist, and thought that I didn't quite know how it would fit in, the idea of living in the west of Ireland, being from the city. I thought the only place that I would get someone would give me a job would be in the city. I didn't know what I would do, but the desire to give it a try came quite strongly. In particular, I just graduated from studying politics over in the Netherlands, and the Netherlands is though it's not that far away, both in Western Europe here and there, it's such a different, especially landscape, but it's a different world. In particular, where we lived in the west of Holland is all reclaimed land from the ocean, very flat. For centuries, it's been altered by humans so much with the way it's been drained and reclaimed from the sea. And the idea of the west of Ireland, which is this like wild, rugged, cliff-filled, windy place, felt like so different and so magical. And the idea came around to see what it'd be like to live there. And when the option of working in Europe, and in particular, I was going to start working in Brussels as an internship that was connected to what I'd been studying in politics. And I felt like when I looked inside myself, I had no desire for that whatsoever. And when my partner suggested this idea of, do you want to try move back to Ireland? We hadn't been living there for years. And maybe we don't have to live in the city. Maybe we could try something different. It really sparked my imagination, and that's when that idea came around. Let's see if we can make it work. Let's try and move to the west. We'll give it a go, and we'll see what happens.
It's one thing to decide to make a move, but making it happen is a different thing altogether. If you've ever had to move house, you'll know what I'm talking about. If you've ever had to move city, which, full disclosure, I've never done, you'll appreciate it even more. And then to move from the city to the other end of the country.
We had some family here that we could stay with at first. And I got a job teaching music, which led us to look for a place to rent. And we really had fallen for the village here in Newport, County Mayo. It's one of the most beautiful villages in Ireland, and we found a little place to rent there for cheap. And that begun our every weekend, or whenever we had time, we would me and my partner
and our dog, which we had then met at that stage, would go for these hikes all around Mayo. And we were always kind of on the half lookout, you know, what if we found a little place, a little cottage? We didn't have much money, so it would have to be something that was basic and affordable, and we could put some work into it, some love into it, and make it a home.
It was after a year or two that Paddy and his partner Jan heard of a place by total chance. A place so small it wasn't on any of the property listings websites. A place wedged in the shadow of Croke Patrick and staring out over Clew Bay. Like a lot of cottages, it was a little long in the tooth.
It needed some care, but structurally it was all there. You know, the things that needed to be done, like water system, windows, things like that. They were kind of a little superficial compared to rebuilding the structure. So we thought, you know, with our limited DIY skills, this was something that was manageable. And it was something that we could afford. And yeah, we fell in love with it. Love at first sight.
For anyone who's watched Paddy's videos, this cottage has become an iconic character, and it's easy to see why. It's difficult to imagine a building that so fully sums up the picture that shoots into your head when you hear the term a rural cottage. And it really is in the middle of nowhere. It's not like those pictures you see of the Sphinx where you zoom back a bit and there's a McDonald's. For someone who'd moved from big city in his 20s, this couldn't have been a bigger leap.
When you are used to living in cities, the thought of having so much isolation and space was quite daunting. And I suppose it took the first winter of being here. So used to summers in the west of Ireland, which can be wet, but they're very pleasant. And something changes then in winter when things get very dark. The isolation takes a different color, kind of. It has a different feeling to it when you are gets dark at before 4 p.m. and the storms can be quite rough. So when we first moved to the west, people did tell us, see how that first winter goes, and you'll have an idea then of what you feel about living here. And we found it quite a spiritual experience going through that first winter. So much time inside by the fire, the darkness, the isolation, the stars like I've never seen them in my life, so bright some nights, seeing the Milky Way above your house each night, things that I wasn't used to.
It was the first of many winters, but as it turned out, it was going to be a springtime that would be the greatest challenge to his new life. Well, to all our lives, as it happened. But it was the springtime of 2020 that in particular everything changed for Paddy, and took him from a monkish existence in an isolated part of the west of Ireland to a viral internet sensation in just a few fateful months.
So it's funny looking back at that time of COVID. I never had such a, never again or before had such a steady routine. It was like just things got regular. You're just kind of going to bed at the same time, waking up at the same time.
Me and Paddy are walking the roads near his cottage. I'm not sure why it's here, where one road seems to blur infinitely into the other and you lose all sense of how far you've come or how far you've still to go. But the subject of COVID comes up. I realise as we talk that it's one of the first times I've discussed it with someone in a sort of, oh, that's a thing that happened way, rather than something immediate and ongoing. Maybe it's only now enough time has passed that we can really look back at the oddness of it all.
Like life felt completely changed. In no way similar to anything else that's happened in my experience. It was both your first child and the pandemic, they're all mixed up together. I don't know what it'd be like to have a child not in the pandemic.
Paddy became a father for the first time a few months after the first lockdown. So for him, the memories of strangeness and uncertainty are in some ways overshadowed by that all-consuming, ever-powerful feeling that fatherhood brings. Or so I'm told. And then there's the other thing that happened to him during those first few months where we all thought the world was ending. What you're hearing is the first video Paddy put out on Twitter on April 13th, 2020, a month and a day after Taoiseach Leo Varadkar announced the beginning of what would be a very long lockdown in Ireland. The video plays out like so many of his later ones would, with Paddy sat on a stool, the very left of the frame showing his cottage, while the rest, the stunning vista of mountains and lake it looks out over, his dog Nisha lying patiently in the background. Considering the cello would go on to be his signature instrument in his videos, it's notable that he's not playing it in this first one.
I was playing music every day and I was experimenting. I was particularly interested in early music, or especially Renaissance and late medieval music. And I had gotten really inspired by a new instrument that I had acquired. It was an old version of a cello called the viola da gamba. So it predates the cello. And I was so delighted exploring this new instrument and the sounds that it could make and the sound world it was from. And when I played the viola da gamba out in the landscape here, it all just fitted so well. And that was when I had the idea to video it. And I think I remember I shared it with friends perhaps first on, maybe we were like updating each other as to what was going on in our life. It was mostly sourdough bread and stuff like that.
And so I would have seen that straight away. Great, fun, lovely. And then with a matter of days, I don't know what happened. You tell me. I don't understand these things.
I feel like maybe Dad sent one saying it's some exaggerated number that he's got so many followers or something, and none of us really believed that. And then I do remember kind of like, you know, Googling and looking and trying to find, and it's like, well, there's only a couple of like, you know, it was only maybe 150 likes on his Instagram or something. And then I realized Twitter, and I was like, what, how many thousand? And like, where is this going? And then reading the comments, like scrolling through people's responses.
Looking through the comments of that first video is interesting in itself. A lot of them are commenting on the instrument, how they'd never seen anything like it. One person comments that it sent them down a 24-hour wormhole looking at Baroque instruments on the internet, which, to be fair, is exactly the sort of thing we had time for during lockdown. And then there were a lot of broader comments about the setting and the music, and the setting and the music, and just how well they go together.
It definitely felt like it was isolated the very first time. I thought, well, that was something that, from my inexperience of how the algorithms work, it was probably maybe some kind of, not fluke, but like not something that would ever be recurrent, the kind of attention I got for the music. So I was playing music every day, and all it took at that time, I was using very basic equipment. I just propped up my phone on a stump that we have in the garden, and I would record it. No microphone, nothing. It was very raw. So it was nothing to just capture some moments of this playing that I was doing anyway. And it was when I started to do it regularly that it dawned on me pretty quick that this was not an isolated thing, people being interested in it. It started to grow in a seriously exponential way.
Over the next week, Paddy posts more videos, this time of him reverting to the more familiar instrument of the cello. While these videos don't quite reach the same numbers as the first one, they're still getting hundreds of likes and consistent levels of comments. People are now talking about Nisha the dog, what a lovely life she must have lying around listening to cello all day. More comments about the setting and the music. By the time summer hits, and with it some rare Irish sun, the videos are getting tens of thousands of likes and retweets.
Commenting and sharing it and sending me messages about how much they appreciated it. You know, various different parts of it, the music, but also the landscape, the history behind where I came across the tunes that I was playing, the time period that the instrument was from. It's just like a whole
deluge of interest from people all over the world about what on earth I was doing, which was so normal to me. It was just what we were doing every day to fill the days. It started to go spill over beyond social media, which was definitely where its genesis took place, but it started to get calls from journalists and asking about it being on news channels around the world, who were in some ways starved for content and looking for something beautiful to put amongst all the gloom. But also a lot of the journalists and researchers that reached out were just genuine fans, people who spend a lot of time on Twitter in particular, social media, and had been following my videos and loved them and wanted to get them on their shows.
I'm trying to think, it would have most likely come from his feed that I saw it. And it probably was one of those things where it got a lot bigger than you realized. Actually, no, scratch that. I would say, you know, our friend group has a WhatsApp that we've shared for years to keep in touch, particularly, you know, we've got friends living in Vancouver, myself, a few of us in London.
July 8th, 2020. I wake up and, like I've done most mornings since lockdown, I check my messages on my phone. Our WhatsApp group has been a mixture of genuine life news, birthday greetings, and, in my case at least, periodic attempts at cabin feverish absurdist humour and sardonic post-apocalyptic gifs. Today, though, one of our friends has sent the following message. So, I just woke up to this in my Facebook feed. Alongside the message is a link to an article by the Irish culture website Love in Dublin. The headline of the article is "Mayo Musician Performs Gorgeous Tribute to Ennio Morricone in Stunning Setting." The composer had passed away 2 days earlier, and Paddy had posted a tribute video where he played an excerpt from Morricone's 1986 film The Mission. Celebrity tributes is something Paddy has done quite a bit over the last few years. In fact, my visit to Mayo has the sad timing of coinciding with the death of Sinead O'Connor. I'm standing in his living room when we hear the news. He posts a tribute version of Nothing Compares to You, which goes viral over the weekend. But the Morricone video was the first time I became aware of these videos, or to be more exact, the first time I became aware that other people were aware of these videos on this sort of scale. The Morricone video in particular picked up a lot of media attention. Twitter was one thing, but when Paddy's video started being talked about in newspapers and on the television, that's when the locals started taking notice.
They were used to hearing me as they walked past the house playing music. It wasn't such a big deal. But then in the local town, when it started to be, you know, on national TV and on the radio and things like that, the word kind of filtered back to everyone around here that, you know, this neighbor of yours that you've been listening to play every day, well, actually, it's not just you that's listening to it. There's millions of people around the world listening to it too. And then I got a wonderful warm response from everyone, and people felt very proud. And I think a big moment early on was when they did a big cover article about me in the Farmer's Journal.
That's where it started. And then within a matter of days, I read in the newspaper and saw figures with lots of zeros after them, and I really didn't understand it.
Do you understand it now?
No, I still don't.
The rain has stopped. Which it always does at some point.
Really?
Well... This is it. I always get asked about, you know, how come you're playing music outside in the west of Ireland, how come it never rains? And I always think, well, if you think that it never rains in the west of Ireland, you've more than likely never been here. And if you've ever owned an instrument made of wood that you love very deeply, you... would never take it out in the rain. So the game is, you can see across the valley when the rain is coming in. It always comes in from the west, and
if you see there's a big dark cloud come across the valley, you get ready to go inside with your cello. But if you see a nice dry spatch like we have now, it's time to get out and play.
Paddy's about to record a video, so I take the chance to see it in real time. The weather's been jumping from one extreme to the other all day, and for a while it looks like he might get a window. Eventually, though, the sun breaks and he's straight out. At this stage, it's almost like a ritual. The camera comes out, his dog Nisha almost instinctively knows what's coming, runs out straight ahead, and before you know it, Paddy is sitting cello in hand like he's done in so many hundreds of videos before.
What I like to do is I set up the camera, as you saw, and the recorder, and then I like to just play and kind of forget about it a bit. It's a continuation on of what I started doing as my form of daily therapy during the COVID lockdowns, is just coming out here and just playing whatever was on my mind. And when I introduced the camera and or the phone and the mic, I just wanted to have a continuation on of that, where I just was playing and enjoying playing and seeing what came of it. So I think I'm gonna play She Moves Through the Fair.
It's one of the country's most enduring and recognizable airs. Every time I hear it, I wonder, is it something about the melody that casts a spell on us, or is it the story it tells? It's a story about loss, but also the promise of reunion, of companionship being taken away, but never totally missing, how someone can be so close, but you can't actually touch them. All these feelings that were a daily part of our lives just a few years ago, feelings that, maybe a bit ironically, themselves seem so distant now. But it was in the middle of that time that something about a man sitting in a field playing cello seemed to break through all that.
One thing I'm curious about, and I'd love to know your opinion on, as someone who, you know, has taught music your whole life, and I guess instigated that love in other people. I mean, I'm curious as to why what happened. I mean, do you have any thoughts as to what it is specifically that appealed to people?
Well, if you're talking to me as a musician, and as you say, a music teacher and a conductor, I can try and say this to you impassionately, that from a very young age, Patrick, even if he was playing the simplest of tunes, he put his whole soul into it. And it may be that's what you're touching on there.
And I suppose when you look at like Paddy's content, you know, particularly during COVID, right, where maybe where that this kind of starts, like, oh yeah, this is the kind of story you wanted to see. Like, we all, like me living in North Carolina, luckily for a few months with my girlfriend, as opposed to like strapped into a 6-person flat in central London, you know, I was very lucky, but I'm sure it could have gone the other way for me. And if I was browsing TikTok or Instagram Reels or whatever it was, and I see this guy, like, you know, and I'm a creative or just interested in music, playing the cello in this like gorgeous view, I'm obviously going to stick around for a minute and see what's going to happen here.
Everything was so unstable, and, you know, people, there's a lot of fear, a lot of anxiety, a lot of like panic. And I think Paddy kind of brought this tranquility and calm and some kind of hope. And it maybe was, you know, took you somewhere else, and that helped people somehow.
It's the performance that communicates to people. So, you know, rather than saying, do you like 16th century music, or do you like 19th century music, or do you like opera, or do you like trad, or whatever, if you really analyze the listener, they want a performance. They want something that moves them. So I think that's what he has.
Paddy's recognition has changed things for him in some ways. His success has allowed him to give up his day job of teaching, for one. He now composes music for documentaries.
It's such an incredible buzz when I get to see the first edit of a video that my music has been used for. And, you know, I get made fun of this by my partner, but my reaction is always the same. It's, wow, it's like my music is real music. So I do feel so privileged in that kind of way. But on the other side, yeah, if my younger version of myself had seen that I did end up putting my life's work into music, they might have been disappointed, you know. I don't think my younger self would have understood what I see now, which is that I do feel there is a place for music in the serious issues that our world presents us with. I do think music has a place in people's hearts and people's minds, and it has a place of importance in our society. That's something that I guess my experiences in particular over the period of COVID and the lockdowns, when I got to learn about how my music and music in general was being such a vital comfort to people and a force for helping people to feel connected at a really disconnected time, or a time when people were feeling that separation from each other and from society. It was through that experience, I think, that my younger self didn't know about, that I feel that music, I realized, has that important place.
This is a subject that Paddy talks a lot about these days. In fact, he's done a whole TED talk on it, literally, with TEDx Stormont, on the topic of the true power of music. It's one I remember well, as the day before he came over to my apartment and sat at my kitchen table to rehearse it, fighting over every word as though, no more than anyone else, he wasn't quite sure how to put down in black and white ink exactly what had happened to him. Needless to say, having never been in that position myself, I wasn't any wiser on the matter. But whatever the true power of music is, the reality of making it central to your life, it always sounds romantic, until it's real. And then the uncertainty kicks in. And as someone who came from a large family of musicians, this isn't lost on Paddy.
I mean, still the idea of being a professional musician is slightly unsettling. You know, I have a family now, so it's not the most stable kind of work. So that looms on me a little, as anyone does in the creative industries. Though I believe that it's something that's really important for society and something that's worth supporting. You know, our current culture perhaps doesn't always feel that way, and, you know, the idea persists that it's not something worth supporting. So I have a little anxiety about having put my eggs in the basket of something that is a little unstable, you know, when you have a family.
And then there's the other stuff that comes along with being on the internet. Paddy says he's lucky in that he doesn't experience too much of the infamous dark side of social media. After all, even the most hardened troll would struggle to get much out of a man playing cello in his back garden. But it has happened. He tells me one story about him thanking an Irish politician for a mention, only to find himself dragged into a political tug of war. At the end of the day, sometimes there's no escaping it. Well, except to do that one thing we should probably all do more of and put down the phone. But that's a whole other conversation.
When you're improvising a piece of music, how do you know when it's finished?
Well, there is always a feeling of a natural cadence. Things come to... Well, often you have a feeling that what you were first talking about has come back. So a melody or a rhythm that you first introduced feels like it's coming behind you and it's ready to come back. And that feels like it's moving towards an ending. And music has a way of meandering its way back to where it came from, and there's often a natural ending there. mean, sometimes it goes off and has other ideas and wants to keep going. But often, if it's a contained piece of music that you feel has a definite feeling of shape to it, when the melody first emerges, it will always find its way back to the end.
Strings was produced for News Talk by me, Hugh Hick. My thanks to Patrick Dexter, who also performed all the music you heard in the programme, and to John Dexter, Aisling McCormick and Jeffrey Courtney. The programme was funded by the Commissioner Mon with the television licence fee.